Welcome to your deep dive.
Ah, yes.
Today, we're venturing into 19th century Catholicism.
Right.
You shared a fascinating lecture with us.
Right.
And we've been digging through it to extract these key insights from this really pivotal era for the Roman Catholic Church in Europe.
Yes.
Our mission today is to unpack the challenges faced by the church.
Right.
And then the contrasting responses of two significant popes, Pius IX and Leo III.
Yeah. What's fascinating here is the context.
Right.
The lecture really sets the stage by highlighting three major shifts in 19th century Europe that deeply affected the Catholic Church.
Yes.
These weren't isolated events, but rather interconnected forces.
I see.
Reshaping society and consequently the church's role within it.
Okay, so let's unpack this.
Okay.
The first shift the lecture points to is this increasing separation of religious influence from secular culture.
Right.
It uses the example of secular control of education.
Mm-hmm.
You know, thinking back to what you found particularly interesting in this lecture, it's easy to forget that for centuries, education was largely under church authority.
Yeah.
The idea of universities and even basic schooling being primarily secular was a real turning point.
Indeed. This wasn't just about administrative changes. It represented a broader shift in how society viewed the source of knowledge and authority, where the church was once the primary arbiter of truth. Secular institutions began to take precedence in areas like education. This naturally led to a decrease in the church's direct influence on the formation of ideas and values.
And then comes the second big shift.
Right.
The rise of science, particularly with Darwinism and the Origin of Species in 1859.
Right.
The lecture highlights how this offered alternative explanations for creation, challenging the church's traditional role as the go-to for life's big questions.
Right.
It wasn't just Darwin, though, right?
That's a crucial point.
Yeah.
The rise of scientific inquiry across various fields, biology, geology, anthropology, fostered a climate where empirical evidence and reason were increasingly valued. This presented a significant challenge to religious explanations that relied on faith and divine revelation.
Okay.
Darwinism, with its theory of natural selection, became a focal point because it directly addressed the question of origins in a way that differed fundamentally from the biblical account.
I see.
This led many to question the church's authority on matters of truth and knowledge.
Right.
This stance directly countered the second major shift you shared from the lecture.
Yeah.
The rising prominence of scientific reasoning and empirical evidence.
The third major shift was the industrialization of the West.
Mm-hmm.
People were moving to cities.
Right.
And the lecture suggests they felt less dependent on religion in this new urban environment.
Right.
Plus, the church seemed to struggle to connect with the needs of this rapidly changing industrialized society.
Right.
It's like the old ways of community and faith tied to agrarian life were disrupted by this massive urban migration.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, industrialization brought about profound social and economic changes.
Yeah.
The rapid growth of cities led to new social structures, new forms of labor, and often harsh living conditions for many who migrated from rural areas.
Right.
The traditional role of the church as a central community hub diminished.
Yeah.
Moreover, the church, with its established structures and traditions, wasn't always equipped to address the unique challenges and social issues that arose in these burgeoning industrial centers, such as poverty, inequality, and worker exploitation.
Knowing this backdrop, it makes sense that the papacy in the 19th century becomes so interesting.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking at two very different figures responding to these massive shifts.
Right.
Pope Pius IX, and his successor, Pope Leo III.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
They represent two distinct approaches to navigating the challenges posed by modernity.
Uh-huh.
Their papacies offer a fascinating case study in how the church grappled with a rapidly changing world.
So let's start with Pope Pius IX, who reigned from 1846 to 1878.
Okay.
The lecture paints a picture of him as someone closing the curtains on the world.
Right.
The central theme of his papacy, it seems, was about identifying and promoting a very specific devout Catholic faith in opposition to what he saw as non-Christian.
Right.
Like some strands of secular philosophy and anti-Christian movements actively hostile to the church, philosophical or societal movements.
That's right.
For Pius IX.
Yeah.
The Catholic Church wasn't a church. Mm-hmm. It was the church.
His worldview was deeply rooted in the belief that the Catholic Church held the fullness of truth.
Yes.
And that the emerging ideologies of the 19th century posed a direct threat to its integrity and authority.
Uh-huh.
This conviction shaped his entire approach to the challenges of his time.
The lecture identifies four key enemies as he saw them.
Right.
Liberalism, rising democracy, rationalism, and anti-clericalism.
Precisely.
It's interesting how these align with those broader societal shifts just discussed.
Pius IX perceived these movements
as
undermining the divinely ordained order.
Okay.
And the traditional role of the church in society.
Okay.
He viewed them not just as differing viewpoints, but as active threats to the spiritual well-being of individuals and the stability of Christian civilization.
And his response to all of this was a movement called Ultramontanism, which the lecture defines as a call for allegiance to the papacy.
Yes.
Looking to Rome as the center of the true church.
Mm-hmm.
A movement, literally meaning beyond the mountains, in reference to looking to Rome as the center.
What's fascinating here is how Ultramontanism provided a clear and centralized focus of authority in a time of perceived instability by emphasizing the Pope's role as the ultimate leader and guide of the church.
Mm-hmm.
Pius IX sought to create a sense of unity and unwavering loyalty among Catholics in the face of these external challenges.
Right.
It was a deliberate effort to fortify the church from within.
The lecture then lists some key actions and doctrines associated with his papacy that supported this Ultramontanist approach.
Mm-hmm.
First, the doctrine of the Immaculate Conception of Mary in 1854.
Exactly.
How did that tie into this?
Right.
Inward focus.
This declaration reinforced papal authority and cultivated a deeper personal devotion within the Catholic sphere, effectively strengthening the internal bonds Pius sought.
Right.
By elevating Mary's status and emphasizing her unique role in salvation history, it resonated deeply with popular piety and strengthened the connection between the faithful in the teachings of the church, as defined by the papacy.
Yeah.
It reinforced a sense of shared Catholic identity and devotion.
Then there were the numerous canonizations of saints.
Absolutely.
The lecture suggests this highlighted the rich tradition and power of the church.
Canonizing saints served multiple purposes.
Okay.
It showcased the historical continuity and spiritual wealth of the Catholic tradition.
Mm-hmm.
It also provided models of exemplary Christian life for the faithful to emulate, reinforcing the values and practices promoted by the church.
Yeah.
Furthermore, the Pope's authority to declare sainthood underscored the central role of the papacy in the life of the church.
Support for missionary work is also mentioned, sending missionaries globally loyal to the papacy with the Jesuits being particularly active.
Right.
So even while seemingly closing the curtains in Europe,
it is this global outreach,
right,
while seemingly outward focused, mm-hmm. was also a means of strengthening Ultramontanism.
Okay.
These missionaries spread not just Christianity, but Roman Catholic Christianity with a clear allegiance to Rome.
Right.
This expanded the influence of the papacy and created a global network of Catholics united under its authority.
And then there's his personal piety.
Right.
The lecture says it served as an example for Roman Catholics.
In times of uncertainty and challenge, a leader's personal integrity and devotion can provide a sense of stability and inspiration.
I see.
Pius and Nyx's reputation
right.
for piety
uh-huh.
served as a powerful reminder of the spiritual foundations of the church and offered a model for the faithful to follow in their own lives.
The First Vatican Council.
Right.
From 1869 to 1870.
The First Vatican Council was indeed a pivotal moment convened in response to the perceived threats of modernity.
Mm-hmm.
It aimed to define Catholic doctrine more precisely and to strengthen the authority of the church.
Yeah.
Particularly the papacy. Pardon. It was a clear statement.
I see.
Of the church's intention to stand firm in its beliefs amidst a changing world.
And out of that council came the doctrine of papal infallibility in 1870.
The doctrine of papal infallibility, while complex in its theological nuances, essentially affirmed that the Pope, when speaking ex cathedra from the church
on matters of faith and morals, is preserved from error by the Holy Spirit.
All right.
This was a highly significant development that further centralized authority within the church and reinforced the Ultramontanist vision.
Finally, the lecture mentions the reestablishment of the Catholic hierarchy.
The reestablishment of the Catholic hierarchy in England after centuries of its absence was a symbolic victory for Pius the Next. And a demonstration of the resurgence of Catholicism.
I see.
In a historically Protestant nation.
Yeah.
It underscored his confidence in the revitalized strength and unity of the church under his guidance.
So the analogy of Pius the Ninth as a figure closing the curtains on the world really does capture his approach. Mm-hmm. He seemed focused.
That's a very insightful question.
Yeah.
While Pius the Ninth's aim was undoubtedly to protect
the church's integrity, it's plausible that his defensive posture and strong condemnation of modern ideas could have alienated some segments of society and contributed to the rise of anti-clericalism.
Right.
His focus on internal strengthening
while
fostering unity among devout Catholics may not have effectively addressed the concerns and needs of those on the periphery or those grappling with the intellectual challenges of the era.
Now let's turn to his successor, Pope Leo III.
The shift in approach is quite remarkable.
Right.
Leo III recognized that the strategy of simply resisting the modern world might not be sustainable in the long run.
Yeah.
He believed the church needed to engage with contemporary society to understand its challenges and to offer its wisdom and guidance in a meaningful way.
One of his aims.
Absolutely.
Was to address this anti-clericalism that had grown under Pius the Ninth, by encouraging clerics to be relevant to their contemporary context.
He understood that the perception of the clergy as being out of touch with the realities of modern life contributed to anti-clerical sentiment.
I see.
By encouraging them to be knowledgeable about contemporary issues and to engage with their communities.
Right.
He hoped to bridge that gap and restore the church's credibility and influence.
He also focused on improving diplomatic relationships with other states, building on Pius the Ninth's efforts.
Oh, it is indeed a significant contrast.
Right.
The loss of the papal states was a major historical turning point.
Right.
However, Leo XIII, while initially lamenting this loss, pragmatically recognized the potential of the Vatican, even in its reduced size, as a moral and diplomatic platform.
Right.
The fact that countries like the United States exchanged diplomats with the Vatican, mm-hmm. highlights its continued international significance.
Right.
Albeit on a different basis.
I see.
Than temporal power.
The lecture then lists other significant actions.
Precisely.
Showing his outward-looking approach.
Encouraging biblical study.
Yeah.
Empowered the laity.
Right.
To engage directly with scripture.
Right.
Moving away from an exclusive reliance mm-hmm. on clerical interpretation.
Okay.
Opening the Vatican archives.
Right.
Even with scholarly restrictions.
Yeah.
Signaled a willingness.
Oh, see.
To engage with historical inquiry and transparency and the outreach
right.
to the Anglican Church. Uh-huh. Despite its lack of immediate success
right.
in achieving full reunion
yeah.
demonstrated a desire oh. for dialogue and reconciliation with other Christian traditions.
But the lecture emphasizes
right.
that Leo XIII's mm-hmm. most important contribution
yeah.
was addressing industrialization.
This was a truly significant departure.
Yeah.
Leo XIII recognized
right.
that the church could not stand aloof
okay.
from the social and economic upheavals
yeah.
of the Industrial Revolution.
Right.
He understood the immense human suffering mm. that accompanied industrialization
right.
and believed the church had a moral imperative to respond.
The lecture uses the example.
That example is incredibly powerful. It
yeah.
provides a concrete picture
right.
of the social realities
yeah.
that Leo XIII sought to address.
Right.
The rapid urbanization and industrial growth
mm-hmm.
created immense challenges for the working classes. And the church,
right.
under his leadership, began to see its role
okay.
as not just spiritual guidance, but also advocating for social justice
right.
and the dignity of workers.
And this leads us to his most famous encyclical.
Brevem Novarum was indeed
yeah.
a groundbreaking document.
Right.
It signaled the church's recognition
uh-huh.
of its responsibility
okay.
to address social injustices
right.
created by industrialization.
Yeah.
It marked a formal entry of the Catholic Church
mm-hmm.
into the discussion
Abhorre.
Of social justice and labor relations.
Right.
It addressed issues such as
uh-huh.
the rights and duties of workers and employers,
mm-hmm.
the role of the state,
okay.
and the importance of fair wages and working conditions.
Mm-hmm.
It laid the foundation for Catholic social teaching.
I see.
That continues to be influential today.
So as you can see,
right.
the 19th century was this period.
What stands out to me
yeah.
is the courage of Leo III
uh-huh.
to shift the church's posture,
yeah, right.
while Pius IX's defensiveness might have provided a sense of security mm-hmm. for some
yeah.
Leo III's willingness
mm-hmm.
to engage with the complexities of the modern world.
Right.
Even with its risks,
yeah.
ultimately positioned the church
uh-huh.
to be a more relevant
I see.
And impactful force
right.
in addressing the challenges of the 20th century
mm-hmm.
and beyond.
What stands out to you most about these two mm-hmm. contrasting approaches?
Right.
And how do you see the long-term impact of their decisions on the Catholic Church
yeah.
and its relationship with the wider world?
This deep dive
right.
into 19th century Catholicism
mm-hmm.
really highlights
yeah.
a fascinating turning point.
And as the lecture points out,
right.
Leo III sets Rerum Novarum in particular,
mm-hmm.
raises important questions about the church's role in society.
Yeah.
That definitely continue to resonate today.
Absolutely.
We encourage you to reflect on these contrasting visions
mm-hmm.
and maybe even explore Rerum Novarum further
yeah, yeah,
to delve deeper
uh-huh.
into the church's ongoing engagement with the challenges of the modern era.
Right.
Consider how these two very different approaches shaped the church.
Yes.
You see today.
Uh-huh.
And the ongoing dialogue between faith
right.
and the ever-evolving world.
Yes.
Thanks for listening.